Welcome to our podcast about Malcolm X, MLK, and Black Lives Matter. I'm Luca.
I'm Taki.
And I'm Bailey.
So, for guys, firstly, let's talk about our education understanding of how we were taught about these kind of two icons of the civil rights movement. I want to go first.
I can start. Sure. I think I first covered Malcolm X probably in like year eight. I want to say maybe quite early in history. Sort of when we started doing a bit of civil rights in history, just sort of, the iconic I Have a Dream speech, the walk and march and everything. So I know it's quite interesting to hear about that, because that's like the first real, like prominent black figure in sort of civil rights and a movement for black people that really I was exposed to. So it was just quite interesting to hear about his struggles and his approach to what he could do for the civil rights movement in terms of what he thought he could contribute to the black community to allow us to sort of elevate ourselves to a point of equality, because that's one thing that he fought for. He wanted equality, he wanted the black voice to be heard, he wanted just complete abolishment. I think at the time of the Jim Crow laws, that were going on. So he just sort of fought against that and fought against this sort of motion that black people are below white people, instead wanted black people and white people to work together and to integrate the black and white community into one just happy mesh, I guess you can call it.
I feel like my understanding of MLK and Malcolm X is, at least with MLK, is pretty similar. I feel like I was taught the idea that he was the kind of great savior, the kind of almost like a prophet. And Malcolm X was kind of a little bit villainized, a little bit, or kind of seen as less to what MLK was, went over Malcolm X, but it was always but focus on MLK. He was kind of this was the guy, this was the one who kind of brought it all together. And I feel that's obviously why we're doing this podcast, is to kind of create a more balanced understanding between the both of them. What about you, Bailey?
Yeah, I didn't really learn that much about the civil rights at school, to be fair. When it did come up, it was normally during Black History Month, we'd maybe have a special history lesson where we'd speak about it for a bit, but we never really went in depth. And as in depth as we got to MLK, we spoke about Rosa Parks. Malcolm X, they may have mentioned him in passing, but it was more of he was there. They didn't particularly villainize him, but they also didn't really say anything about him. He was just a figure that was there. Whereas MLK, obviously, I knew the I Have a Dream speech, we went in depth about what he did. Whereas Malcolm X, all my understandings came from just social media, just hearing other people talk about him in passing. It's just one of those figures that is a famous figure, so you hear about, but never really formally in education learn about him. He was kind of seen as we said, the lesser figure, not as important to learn about.
So let's kick off, I guess, this Malcolm X portion of the podcast. I want to sort of just talk about, I don't know if you guys have seen the Black Panther movie.
Yeah.
I think that's a very fair comparison between the two, because if you look at Killmonger kind of as Malcolm X, and then T'Challa as Martin Luther King, someone who wants to sort of, Killmonger wants to sort of take the kingdom of Wakanda out into the world. He wants to give all the black people all the power and tools to sort of elevate them and everything. He wants to weaponize us as people and use it to sort of take back control, take back what was ours. Whereas T'Challa's more of a very peaceful approach, which I think is the general overview and understanding of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. But I think sort of, just to get in my notes here, can just start talking a bit about Malcolm X. So Malcolm X, he was born in Nebraska in 1925. He was a huge prominent leader within the Nation of Islam. And later he became a global human rights activist who strongly advocated for the rights of African Americans. Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, they were both born into a world tainted by systemic racism. Malcolm X's childhood experiences really, I think, sowed the seeds for his lifelong commitment to black empowerment. The Ku Klux Klan or the KKK at that time, the violence that they committed forced his family to move, and after the tragic murder of his father, instilled an uncompromising rejection of racism and a deep belief in self-determination. You know, Malcolm spent a little bit in the 1940s, I think it was, in prison. And that's really where he converted to the Nation of Islam, therefore adopting the X as a symbol of his stolen identity. He was a charismatic and, you know, eloquent spokesperson for the Nation. His views evolved over time. He took a pilgrimage to Mecca and converted to Sunni Islam and founded the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And in later years, he believed his beliefs began to divulge from separatist ideologies in his career, and he began to argue the solution for America's racial issue lays not in separation, but in the radical transformation of the society as a whole. So to sort of just get on, you know, why Malcolm X was controversial at the time, I think it was down to his rhetoric and advocacy for violence. Malcolm X promoted self-defense and retaliation against the white oppression. He famously stated, "By any means necessary." This militant stance, advocating violence if necessary, was perceived by many as inflammatory and threatening. And some critics argue that his rhetoric could possibly indict further violence and hinder the progress of the civil rights movement. But I think with how the civil rights movement was going at that time, I think it's very understanding to see where Malcolm X was coming from when it comes to this whole thing. It's been a thing of, for centuries, you've been oppressed and everyone's telling you to be peaceful in your fight for, I guess, your livelihood, which is a crazy thing to say, like, be peaceful, you know, try and approach us and talk to us like normally when we've been treated like nothing lesser. And now you want to tell me to sort of just approach this as peaceful and sort of be kind to you. So his very action and militant stance, I can understand. And I think that the villainization of this is, I don't think it's correct, because if you back someone to a corner, they're going to come out swinging. So I think this is bound to happen. His stance on this, I think, empowered a lot of black people in the community. He was giving a lot of black people this sort of belief in themselves and a sort of love for their own color that I don't think they'd been receiving for a minute. He was also very, very controversial because, I mean, it's separatism and black nationalism. He advocated for black separatism and an establishment of a separate black nation distinct from white America. He rejected the ideas of integration and instead promoted black nationalism and self-reliance. The separatist ideology was seen by many as dismissive and contrary to the goal of achieving racial equality and integration. So he sort of just fought against the whole thing of, you know, let's bring the black and white community together and as one, let's build and do whatever. He was like, no, I don't want to build with this white America. It has what it stands for. I want to divide into this freedom for my black brothers and sisters so we can create our own thing, have our own establishment and keep separate from the people that try to oppress us. Let's, as one, just build ourselves up and everything. Malcolm X was very critical on notorious civil rights leaders. He criticized people like Martin Luther King. He perceived their approach as very passive. He believed that the nonviolent struggle was ineffective in achieving meaningful change and criticized leaders who have advocated it. His criticism of the prominent people in the civil rights movement were widely respected, made him unpopular among activists and supporters, which, I mean, I think that just goes without saying. If you go against the people who, you know, so many people in the world love, then you're going to get hate and backlash for it. But I think it is also important to note that Malcolm X's views and approach did evolve over time, especially after his departure from the Nation of Islam as pilgrim to Mecca, which he encountered more inclusive and universal approaches to Islam. In his later years, he became more open to cooperation with other civil rights activists and expressed desire for racial harmony. However, his early reputation and controversy surrounding his earlier views and rhetoric continue to shape his public opinion, which I think has sort of translated to today and this modern age. Because he was so unpopular amongst these huge speakers and civil rights people that we see and hear about today, that's why he's so villainized. I think a lot of the stuff that Malcolm X believed in and the way he approached certain issues, I do agree with. Because at that time, a non-violent approach almost seemed like a crazy thing to work. Like it almost seemed impossible for it to work. And he was just trying to give, you know, black people just back like a sort of self-respect and, you know, a fight in between and in within them so they can fight back and be able to accomplish something for themselves and really just, you know, just hopefully at some point achieve a civil, like, actually like respect or be seen in this white America, as you like to call it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think Malcolm X has been villainized. I do think there is a lot of. I think he's not as respected as MLK, and that's also probably because of his background and what he kind of went through as a child with his dad, and just like, I mean, the decisions and the things he did in his earlier life. But I think that a lot of the things that he says are true. That idea of kind of, you know, not taking it slow, the kind of, we have to, you know, fight for it. We have to, you know, we won't, there's a likelihood we'll never be seen equal to the white man. I think there's a lot, especially today, I feel that there's a lot of a linkage towards Malcolm X. Today.
And I think, like, his past and what he went through is so often just not talked about. Mm. And I think when you realise, you know, just how bad it was for him and just how, you know, how badly his life was impacted by racism, it makes sense he was angry.
Mm.
Like, anyone would be angry. And to expect someone who has been treated that way to sit quietly and be peaceful is wild, you know. Mm. That's not a natural human response to what he had to go through.
I think that's one of those key things that, you know, we have to remember about that. I think that sometimes when we talk about people's kind of the decisions or actions that they make, or that maybe they're, people don't look at kind of their earlier life a lot and think, oh, okay, well, this kind of, you know, will make sense, or maybe some of his ideologies or like, but it, or they use their someone's past as kind of to try and degrade them or make them kind of lesser of their, of whatever the kind of their equal is in this case, MLK and Malcolm X.
100%.
So but listen, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X are two of the most influential civil rights leaders in American history. Although their ideologies and tactics often differed, they both had the same goal, justice and equality for Black America. Frequently seen as opposing forces, their different strategies in reaching that goal are usually framed as nonviolent versus violent and integration versus separation. And the difference, the difference between the two men is a peaceful Christian insider versus a Muslim political renegade. But I mean, the truth is, of course, that it's more nuanced than that. I mean, Martin Luther King emerged as a leader of the civil rights movement in the late 50s and advocated nonviolent protest as a means of achieving social change. He argued that social change required appealing to the conscience and moral principles of all people, including those in a position of power. King spoke of the beloved community, a vision of a future society based on justice, equality, dignity, and harmonious race relations, which he said could not be achieved through violence, but rather through understanding, reconciliation, and integration. His belief in nonviolence was rooted in his Christian faith and was inspired by figures such as Jesus, Gandhi, and Henry David Thoreau. But it was also a pragmatic belief that the black community would always be outnumbered by the white counterparts and could therefore never win through violent confrontation. Peniel Joseph, who's the chair in ethics and political values at the LBJ School of Public Affairs and professor of history at the University of Texas in Austin, said that, and I quote, "The mythology around both men frames them as opposites. It frames Malcolm as King's evil twin and King as the saint who would just give everybody a hug if he was alive right now. that really takes away from the understanding of the depth and breadth of their political power, their political radicalism, and their evolution over time. End quote. Both men were ministers, and their different religious affiliations played a significant role in their lives and ideologies. King followed the teachings of the Bible and preached understanding and tolerance, which resonated with many in Christian America. Malcolm X, on the other hand, as a Muslim minister, garnered support from the Islamic community and from those who tried to integrate and had themselves been the victims of wrongful arrest and racist brutality. However, critics believed that their religious divide was also a significant reason why they didn't or couldn't work together, despite their shared ambitions. In addition, Malcolm X's Muslim faith was often used to vilify him, with the Reverend King's Christian faith and so on and so forth, peaceful message, seen as an easier sell to those Americans wary of Islam. Yet, in many respects, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X are revolutionary sides of the same coin, sharing key beliefs and principles which are often ignored or overlooked in discussing their respective roles in the civil rights movement. Despite significant differences in their upbringings and formal education, middle-class King had a PhD from Boston University, whilst Malcolm X suffered childhood racial trauma and was a high school dropout. They nevertheless both supported women's education, both married very educated women, Malcolm X to Betty Shabazz, an American educator and trained nurse, and Martin Luther King to Coretta Scott King, an American educator and author. Individually, and due to their charisma and oratory skills, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King were able to draw large crowds of people who came from far and wide to attend their rallies and hear them firsthand, which many in the government and wider white society felt threatened by. Had they worked together and combined their efforts, they would almost certainly have accomplished even more. As Peniel Joseph states, and once again I quote, they both had misapprehensions about each other, and they made mistakes about each other. When they started out, King thought Malcolm was this narrow, anti-white black nationalist. Malcolm thought King was this bourgeois, reinformed-minded Uncle Tom. Neither of them were those things. They both needed each other. End quote. Later in life, as Malcolm X moderated some of these views and King broadened his vision beyond racial integration, the two leaders' ideologies seemed to converge. Both came to recognize the systemic nature of racism in American society, and both moved a strict focus on legal equality, emphasizing instead the need for economic justice and solidarity of all opposed groups. Today, they are regarded as two of the most significant civil rights activists who ever lived, and who were able to create perhaps the greatest awareness of civil rights and racial injustice ever seen. MLK and Malcolm X fought the same enemy, and even though they approached the battle in different ways, the enemy clearly knows the level of threat they pose to the scourge of white supremacy in their quest for equality and justice. Joseph observes, and I quote, King remains a major global political mobilizer, and the way in which he framed the idea of racial justice globally is very important. Malcolm X was the first modern activist who was saying Black Lives Matter in a really deep and definitive way and became the avatar for the Black Power movement, end quote. So MLK and Malcolm X made invaluable contributions to the civil rights movement through their convictions, courage and willingness to challenge the injustice and oppression that they saw around them. Through their words, actions and example, they inspired generations of activists and opened their eyes to many Americans to the realities of racial inequality and the urgent need for social change. And they have left a legacy which continues to shape conversations about race, justice and activism in America today.
I think also, like, when we talk about MLK today, we put him as this poster child of the civil rights movement, and we forget that that's not how America viewed him at the time. He was assassinated. He was on FBI's constant watch list. Like, we view him as the peaceful, calm one that everyone loved, but they didn't. You know, at the time, he was also seen as radical, and they were both doing something radical by standing up for black rights. And it's very important that we realise that both of them were vilified at the time, and America has just chosen to put a narrative that suits them best. And Martin Luther King, coming from the background, as we said, that like bourgeois middle class background, is just a better narrative for them, for their current agenda.
Even picking on Martin Luther King's peacefulness, he, if they put him as the poster child, he's the poster child for, oh, let's all, you know, come together, equality and all that, not, you know, let's fight against this inherently racist system. Because, I mean, that's what Malcolm X's one of the main things was. He was like, this is a systemically racist system. Like, the way that the system is built, it's built against black people. We can't thrive or anything, or even build in this nation, in this white nation. as it is, because it's just built to oppress us and keep us down. So until we can topple that, or even just move completely away from it, we will never truly be equal or free.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that's how, like, we can link these ideas to today, you know. Mm. All this false learning of what these characters are and who and what they fought for, vilifying one and making one into a hero, it doesn't help today, and specifically the Black Lives Matter protests that we saw in 2020, by discrediting Martin Luther King's more radical side and framing Malcolm X as something of the complete opposite. It allows people to critique and discredit radical, more socialist ideals today in the guise of it not being in the spirit of King. This was directly seen in the Black Lives Matter protests and was seen across the political spectrum. Reverend Barbara Reynolds, herself part of the civil rights movement, said in the Washington Post that Black Lives Matter seems intent on rejecting our proven methods. Our meaning hers and King's. Former presidential candidate for the Republican Party, Mike Huckabee, stated that Martin Luther King would be appalled by the strategies used by Black Lives Matter and said to them to be more like King. Congressman John Lewis, a former SNCC chair, said that what they were doing in the 1960s was good trouble, it was necessary trouble, and the message today needs to be done in a non-violent and orderly fashion. These are just a few examples of many of people using the civil rights movement and specifically the work of King to talk down upon the Black Lives Matter protests. But these protests were needed, and 3 years on now after the big worldwide protests that we saw in 2020, we can see that change has started to happen, and in the words of John Lewis, it was necessary change. In the UK, the Metropolitan Police finally did an inquest into institutional racism, misogyny and homophobia, and it was found guilty of all of the above. It is hard to know if this inquest would have ever happened with or without Black Lives Matter, but the timing is too coincidental and it definitely had an effect on it. This is just one example of around-the-world examples of how the protests have garnered real-world and positive change, not to mention the smaller things that you cannot measure, like how many people have had conversations with family members to get them to rethink their own biases. Difficult, honest, and needed conversations are now being had worldwide in a way that for so long was brushed off as no longer needed, something that was overcome in the 60s. Obviously, there is still a way to go and the fight is not over. And if the media and the way that we educate around the civil rights movement allowed us to speak more truly about how radical Martin Luther King was and stopped villainising the Black Power movement and Malcolm X, then we would be really able to get down to the root of what causes white supremacy and racism and begin to put an end to the ways in which systemically and systematically racism is embedded into the 21st century. Protests do make change, both violent and peaceful. We are taught about the suffragettes and their violent protests just as in depth as we are taught about the suffragists, if not more. Why should it be any different for the civil rights movement? Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were not two completely opposing figures. One was not a hero and the other was not a villain. Instead, both were radical in their own right and both wanted to create change for Black people in the US. And I think if both were alive today, I think they would both realise that the fight is still not yet over and they would both be in support of Black Lives Matter and the change that they are trying to create.
I agree.
Yeah, same here.
100%. Same here. I think the Black Lives Matter protest really brought to light a lot of the issues that just have come about and I think have been almost snowballing for years and years and years, because like this is where I think it's the sort of Malcolm X kind of versus Martin Luther King ideology, depending on which side of the fence you kind of fall on, that the more peaceful or more proactive. Because I think the Black Lives Matter protest, especially in America, came to a point where it was just so much of the Black community being shoved into a corner and almost like belittled, you know, everything just sort of oppressed and everything, that they just had to come back fighting. And even though I think a lot of those protests were not peaceful and everything, I think it just came to a thing, to a point where it just had to be, our voice needs to be heard. It adopted this Malcolm X view of by any means necessary, we need to be heard, which I think had been coming for a while. And to just, for this to see it, I think it was something that was expected, but to see the magnitude and just how far the Black Lives Matter movement managed to reach and how many people, you know, just like you sort of touched on, how many families had conversations, just, you know, sparking me, and like, oh, like this is an issue that's actually going on. Like, you say this, and actually, like, that's not okay in this day and age. Like, you need to understand and move away from that. It's just, I don't even think both of them, this is what they fought for, essentially. I don't think both of them would believe that something of this scale could happen in this world. It's almost, I think it'd be almost alien to them.
Mm.
So I think it's crazy that, you know, we managed to live through such a, I don't know, like a an unprecedented time, and like I guess in our lifetime. So
yeah, you wouldn't imagine, like, after 65 and the March on Washington, yeah, all these kind of that real era, that the era of civil rights as it's known, right, that we would sit here in 2023 or even before with George Floyd. I mean, like, Atlanta literally being on fire, you know, cities burning, you know, rioting, because it goes back to this idea that it is in many cases a matter of education, right? Mm-hmm. You know, MLK, you know, whether if neither of them had been assassinated, you know, where would we be now? Where would they be sat today in 2023? What would they be saying? Would they be saying something different? Would they be agreeing with what had the actions that Black Lives Matter had done? We'll never know. But it's one of those things where when we look at something like MLK and the thought of, you know, coming together and, you know, that the I Have a Dream speech, and yes, you know, it got rid of the Jim Crow laws, which were seen as just slavery without the name, right? But the problem that America has as well is the fact that, and in some sense Malcolm X does touch on it, that he goes, it doesn't matter if we don't have these laws or not, the white man's never going to respect us.
Yeah.
So what's the point? Why should we try? If then we're never going to get treated equally, really, deep down in that systemic education and the mindset that has stained America for centuries now. I mean, this is a nation that was one of the longest to have slavery, you know, of that kind of caliber. And to have that whole war, and then, you know, not even a century later, we're having the kind of civil rights discussions, Jim Crow, the blackface minstrelsy, whatever you want. Then to, after all that, I feel like America, in some sense, that's why, you know, when we talk about MLK being the saint and an easier sell, is because it was, oh yeah, it's cooperation. So, you know, we'll get rid of these kind of, these bad laws that don't, okay, yeah, don't make us look like a great image, but especially because the power that America now had on the world. But what came with that was the lack of people actually educating themselves or educating their children or their grandchildren. That idea that, you know, the almost romanticism that history can bring, that kind of, oh yeah, remembering the days of simpler times or anything like that. And it can create these real problems, you know.
Mm. 100%. You can change the law, but until you get into the root of the problem, it's going to keep growing. See this? And that's what we've really struggled to get to, the root of white supremacy and the root of that systemic and systematical racism that is still very much present.
Just to sort of pose a question to you guys, like, I think, as I've sort of been talking, I've been sort of formulating this thing of, do you think there's more to come? Do you think the 2020 Black Lives Uprising was just the first of many to come over the next decade? Or do you think we'll just see little changes that will lead to something? Or do you think the civil rights movement, I don't want to say is done, because I don't think it can ever be done, really. Yeah. So, but I think, do you think it's a point where people are content with what's going on?
I think it's a matter of, I feel like it could come down to really the kind of decisions and actions that are going to be made over the next decade or 20 years or however long we want to look at it. I mean, you've got to try and change and try and, yeah, change those institutions that have held such power. I mean, if we focus on something like the United States,
mm-hmm.
you've got to change, like, in the legal context, I guess, or like in those institutions, maybe something like, you know, reforming the police, having a better system to protect people from, you know, officers who are white supremacist, and having a better education system, you know, improving the education system so that kids, no matter what, are being taught the, you know, the right side of history. We have to get away. America really has to get away from the romanticism of its past, because its past is an ugly one.
Yeah.
It never was a good one. It was a colony. It was, you know, the British went over, they murdered the natives, mm-hmm. colonized it, brought slavery, held them far longer than it should have been. You know, it was one of the largest economies that used slavery, then had a whole war about it, and still to this day, we, you know, it's still coming up so much, but it's because of that long-standing time from the 1900s to say the 1950s and even into the civil rights era, where America did so many things to try and make that past seem so romantic and actually quite not as bad as it once was,
and really try and make it the past, you know, really try and focus, this is history, this is the past, rather than realizing how that past has linked to today and how it still lingers today, you know, because by putting it as something of the past, they can kind of be like, we've moved past that now, you know, we had a black president, when there's so much more than that.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there's this thing where it's like, it's not a matter of, say, apologizing for your past. Mm. It's about acknowledging how bad that past was and being able to go, okay, well, but we're going to move on. We're going to move forward. Mm. We're going to help. We're going to change. We are going to make this better.
Mm.
There must be some kind of a desire for an improvement. But I guess then the real difficult question comes from the fact of, can America do that? Mm. And that's something we just don't know.
Yeah.
So that's something we're going to find out within the next 10 years, 20 years, maybe once there's a generation gone, and maybe that, you know, our generation will be kind of a majority or the following or whatever. I feel like I'm going to have hope that it'll be kind of our generation and maybe just the recent generation before, where they'll be start to kind of get that wave of correct education and we'll try and push for that kind of ideals. But for right now, today, it's going to take a lot.
Well, I do think we're starting to see it, because I think one of the points I'd written down was a thing of, when we look at the Black Lives Matter movement now, like, it encompasses so much. The civil rights movement back in the day used to just be black civil rights. Now it's including black trans people, black gay people. It's the black community. It's everyone who is black. It's more involving. It's more progressive. So I think there is a lot of hope in the future when it comes to, you know, civil discourse and everything, you know, everyone coming together and a better future for anyone, no matter like what you are. I think it's a very bright future, and you know, I'm excited to see what happens and where, like, we really go.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta have hope, right?
Yeah,
you gotta believe. Just gotta believe.
Otherwise, it's a depressing life.
Yeah, exactly.
I really hope that, like, the Black Lives Matter protests have created a turning point in history. And I think we're hopefully going to be really lucky to start to see that turning point in history.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I did. I think that's what I think I've seen, you know, personally, just a few, like, people that I've known personally just sort of have a change and just even just like almost flipped a switch in people, which is kind of a crazy thing to see, you know, because there's some people just like, I don't think they even realize, and like you said, it's down to education. They didn't even realize like everything and just how bad it was getting. And then just to see like, if you like, because I think it was like during lockdown that the majority of this stuff happened. So like that sort of switch in between, like me not seeing some people until after lockdown and after the sort of main protest took place, was just a crazy difference, because I could see that people had started to educate themselves and actually take an interest in, you know, instead of just living their life as sort of, you know, it doesn't affect me, why should I get involved? It became a thing of, whoa, this is deep. I need to understand, like, the ignorance.
It's that idea of people being actively anti-racist rather than just not being racist.
100%.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like the since 2020 and kind of this real resurgence or surgence of Black Lives Matter, I feel like, yeah, we do have that thing now where people are going, okay, I've got to be more knowledgeable, I've got to be more active in this, I've got to understand better, I've got to have an involvement in this. It can't just, as you say, it can't just be I'm not racist. It's got to be, no, I've got to be against racism, I've got to stand for that, I've got to believe, you know, I've got to show, you know, I feel like that's a really strong piece of evidence to have hope for a better future, because I feel like we are seeing you know, that beginning of, okay, I've got to, you know, people really are wanting to get more involved in this.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's good. Mm. So I guess it's probably a good way to end on a light note, I feel like, you know.
Nice
positive, exactly. So, you know, thank you very much for listening, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you all.